Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast here at Archant Towers to discuss all the latest Canaries news and opinion. I am Michael Bailey and I am with our Canaries correspondent colleague David Freezer and chief Norwich City writer Paddy Davitt. We can talk about Norwich City at home to Reading, a game, of course, which Norwich won 3-2. But also, Paddy, we could talk about your lovely trip at the Gold Cup.
Wonderful day out, everybody. I highly recommend it. Oh, no, actually don't go, because there was 70,000 there on Gold Cup day, and that was busy enough. So a few less would be excellent. But yes, so as a result, and then Saturday, obviously, while you boys were freezing certain parts of your anatomy, along with all those other brave souls, I was knocking back Guinness, watching a rugby.
Jeez. Earlier.
In a pub. So I was quite warm and quite inebriated by the end of the day. But the good news was, when I checked at half-time and it was 3-1, I thought, well, wouldn't you just know it? I've seen about 8 games at Carrow Road with less than 4 goals combined. So I thought, yep, boys will be enjoying that. And I checked at full-time and saw it was 3-2. And Reading had scored early on in the second half. I was thinking, well, I bet that was quite nervy. So over to you, boys.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It's funny you say that. I think I did write it in today, so I can't remember the exact tally, but it was, I think Norwich had scored 6 goals at Carrow Road in the 7 games since they last scored 3 against Sheffield Wednesday. So yeah, 6 goals in 7 games, I think, in front of their home fans. I think it's down there, Dave. And then of course we got 3, 6 and 7. So, and then we get 3 in one day. Did Dave tell Paddy just how wonderful it was? Because at the moment we're still stewing on his Guinness story, which sounded much better.
Yeah, I've been to the Gold Cup a couple of times as well, and it is a brilliant atmosphere. But it was a good atmosphere at Carrow Road on Saturday as well, despite the cold. People managed to get a bit excited, and I did put it to Daniel at full time that it was a nervous second half. Would you have liked to have been more comfortable? How sort of comfortable was he in the dugout? And he wasn't having it, really, that it was that nerve wracking. And other than Angus Gunn making one excellent save from Jan Kermigan in the 82nd minute at his near post, to be fair, Reading didn't have many clear-cut chances, did they? But that they were just lumping the ball in the bot desperately, as they should have been, really, because they're now deep in relegation trouble. But yeah, if Dennis Shabini had scored that big chance in the second half, which would have capped a much improved display from him, Josh Murphy had a few chances, O'Neill Hernandez had a cross shot which deflected against the post. They had the chances to make it more comfortable, but that would have been a stretch too far. 3 goals at once, you know, we can't spoil ourselves, can we?
Well, especially given that, you know, for the second Saturday on the trot, Norwich were 3-1 up and in danger of throwing it away. I think that got clocked by more than a few people.
You made me nervous when you pointed that out at half time.
Sorry, yeah. Didn't want to sit next to me at a football match. Half the time I'm shouting at the referee as well, but we'll get onto that too. It's an interesting balance, isn't it, Dave, just now in terms of, you know, it was a good performance in a lot of areas, but there were still areas of real shortcomings, and there's clearly fans that are still they don't want to get too excited when Norwich win, especially with the season it's been, and it's been of a level, and there's a very low ceiling in terms of what they've managed. So it's a tricky balance, isn't it?
No, and I think everyone's been adding that caveat, haven't they, that Reading weren't great, they were low on confidence. But after 2 0-0 draws and the struggles at home, frankly, this season, you can allow everyone to get a little bit overexcited on a freezing cold day for it to have been worth it, really. I'd imagine there's a lot of people who, before the game, thought, oh, can I be bothered with this in this cold? And the ones who did were rewarded for it. And Daniel was pleased that they saw an entertaining game as well, because, you know, 2 successive 0-0 draws isn't something that happens very often at Carrow Road at all. Norwich, throughout the years, have always had a decent standard at home, and the away fans have almost enjoyed more fun this season, haven't they, with the amount of wins they've had. So I think it's less about the performance. It was a step forward. In the big scheme of things, it probably doesn't mean a great deal, because we all know that they're sort of dead rubbers now towards the end of the season, but they're not dead rubbers. They're nearly dead rubbers. because there's still plenty to play for within the squad, isn't there? There are still Dennis Shrabini to see what he can do. There is still Mario Vrancic stepping up and showing what he can do. O'Neill Hernandez is now starting to show what he's capable of. Josh Murphy all of a sudden looks a different player. So the season is far and away from finished, and there's still plenty to keep Norwich fans interested. But as when we were on the way home from Barnsley, we recorded the pod, didn't I? And I was saying that what this season needs is people to step up and give new storylines, new things for people to talk about, and signs of progression. And we got some of that on Saturday. But yeah, if you're playing against Wolves or Fulham, more aptly, I suppose, as they're up next, that still may not have been enough. You still probably would need more steel in the team to hold those sort of teams back.
We've spoken a lot about the balance of going forward and defensive, the sort of opening up and scoring goals, and then when they do that, Norwich seemingly unable to keep them out, whereas the flip side is when they can't score, they seem generally to be a lot tighter at the back. My point being that don't take that for granted, because I've seen Norwich sides who have looked tight and then try and find a formula for scoring goals actually still fail to score goals and concede them and just generally get worse. So at least Norwich are scoring goals as well when they try and open up. Paddy, we got the chance to watch the highlights of the game at your desk and take in your reactions to the goals, having seen them at a later date and could kind of take them in. What did you make of it?
Obviously the positives, scoring three for the second week running and this time getting some points, but yeah, the standout issues for me were the goals against, and as you say, in a three they look far more solid than they do in a four, and we saw that vulnerability again on the highlights, I stress. But shambolic for the first Reading goal. I mean, they had two or three chances to clear it after closer cleared it off the line. Pinto again not covering himself in glory defensively, and the second goal, well, I mean, that's just travelled through about three yellow shirts inside their 18-yard box, and Jamal's the wrong side of the guy who has the simplest of tasks. Good ball, though, it was from the wide right. Again, Pinto's flank. So, yeah, I would be slightly concerned that as much as, the focus has switched around to the top end of the pitch now and trying to embellish the defensive solidity that they had seemingly harnessed, that's gone away now, and it's no coincidence it's gone away since they've gone from a three back to a four. So it isn't simply a case of the back door's now firmly shut and how do we prise open the door at the other end. It's, I'm afraid, a slight concern that defensively they look vulnerable again, and I think it's too simplistic to say it's coincided with Pinto's return, because we all know that's probably not his strongest facet of his game, is his defensive work. I think it's more to do with the shape. I think since Zimmerman's come out and they've had to go to the flat four, now we put that point to Daniel ahead of the Barnsley game, he wasn't having it, and actually referenced the two home games which were both nil-nils, but they were nil-nils achieved with a back four. So yep, I take on board what he's saying, but I just think over the piece, when have Norwich looked most resolute? And it's with a three for me this season. So yes, while we're all talking about the top end of the pitch, can we sort of nail down the back end for me again? And because if not, it doesn't matter how many goals they score, you're still going to have games very similar to Reading between now and the end of the season where, and again, well, we had it at Hull, didn't we? Where they were fortunate to be 3-1 because they should have conceded before then. But when they did get to 3-1, they wasn't able to sort of shut the door. So it is a little bit of a strange scenario now. How he can go back to being defensively solid while still now opening up the attacking weaponry that you see a Murphy, again, going back to the highlights, you see a Murphy, you see Hernandez flying down both flanks. Madison obviously got himself in an advanced position to earn that penalty. It's there, but it's not there as it needs to be in terms of the most perfect mix. So it's almost like the cake still needs to be maybe added an ingredient or two here or there.
Yeah, I was literally trying to sit down and think about the formation in my head and whether they can just play a back five and then a four and have one. I mean, in terms of the best parts of those two formations, having the front three and should be possible, but I guess it's not quite as simplistic as that. It's when you're trying to take the shape out on the pitch and maybe losing a holding midfielder. There were lots of plus points in terms of Norwich's performances and individuals. And Mario Vrančić was one of those in one of the holding roles. It was a game that felt like it would suit Mario, to be honest, because I think Hull gave him a bit of room in the way they play. Always made it feel to me like it would be a decent game for him, but he did well, and you could be free to talk about the other ones as well, Dave.
Yeah, that being a similarly possession-based team, it was always going to be one where there was a bit of room for quality to shine, and Mario stepped up. The big thing with Mario, though, is that at the start of the season, he looked like he wanted too much time on the ball, like he was too slow to get his passes away, and like he was shocked by the intensity of the physical battle. But none of that anymore. I mean, Barnsley on Tuesday night, he stood up for himself when I can't remember who it was, somebody put in a bit of a late tackle on him, and he was happy to get stuck in. And again on Saturday, he handled that side of things. I think the only problem really Saturday is that you had Harrison Reed and him, so you were kind of lacking some muscle there. If you'd have had Alex Tetti alongside him, I think Norwich would probably have looked a bit more solid. But yeah, thinking about the sort of formation that you floated there, I suppose if you're going to play a 5-4-1, you almost need the sort of, you need a sweeper almost, don't you? The centre-back, say if that's Christoph Zimmermann, I suppose they've got to be comfortable to sort of step out a little bit with the ball and maybe put in a tackle a bit closer to midfield at times. So it's a difficult balance to strike. But what we saw, I mean, you won't like to hear this, Pad, but what we saw for pretty much the first time on Saturday was a bit of width. And Daniel spoke afterwards about the fact that they deployed James Maddison in a slightly different role, and I guess that's almost planning for next season in a post-Maddison world, where he was clearly, and Vrančić, were instructed to feed Murphy and Hernandez and let them do the attacking. And you know, whether you've got Nelson Oliveira, Dennis Rabini or David Fraser up front, if nobody is putting the ball in the box, then it doesn't make much difference really, does it? And with having those two wide guys out there, it bought Rabini a bit of space. It meant that he wasn't so isolated. Okay, they weren't exactly swinging balls onto the top of his head throughout the game, but he looked about as involved as a Norwich striker has done all season, and fair play to the guy, he put in a real effort for the team.
I love that you've thrown yourself into the hat there, Dave. Well, I hope we get to see that and give you proper analysis as a result.
I was going the other end of the scale.
But it's a bit, what it did do, because they were able to go quite direct and use their pace at times, it actually meant that they did still create chances through the middle, because it was such a mix-up. They didn't quite know how to cope with it at times.
Well, let me just throw that in there. So where on the pitch was Maddison playing? Because obviously most of this season he has been, and the problem has been, it's been quite laborious, but he has been in that perimeter of the 18-yard line when Norwich are attacking. So are you boys saying he was a lot deeper?
I would say not a lot deeper, maybe 5 to 10 yards deeper than he normally would be. And rather than looking to run the show himself quite as much, it was more servicing the wide men. Yeah. And Vrančić was there. I mean, Vrančić played some lovely balls into Josh, didn't he? And there was one, for the second goal, he played Josh clean through. Gunter made a really good block, didn't he? And then from the corner, Hanley heads in. And just before that as well, Vrančić had played Murphy clean through, and it was the one where I think Tyler Blackett got back and stopped Hernandez from turning in from close range. So him and Murphy really did have a nice link up there. So yeah, just not dramatically different. Maybe more the instructions. It's less about James Maddison and more about the team.
Yeah, I would say it's only an instruction as to what to do with the ball. Mm. And it was interesting that Josh Murphy also picked up on the fact that James Maddison burst into the box to win the penalty from his break, and that, you know, in Josh's own words, James knows he needs to do that more often, which I thought was quite likely, because it's not very often we've heard of things that James Maddison needs to improve on. We've almost been wrapped up in all the things he does so well that It was interesting to hear that, and good to see him do it as well.
Yeah, of course, and it's only going to help him in terms of his value as a commodity if we're looking at the bigger picture, because you don't want to get pigeonholed as albeit a very, very talented young midfielder, but if he can, the more facets and dimensions to his game as a midfielder, the more interest I'm sure that's going to attract. But I mean, his stats are phenomenal now. You know, 14 goals, 10 assists. 21, 22 years of age. Is there a better English talent outside of the top flight? I mean, there's a lot of talk of the boys Sessegnon at Fulham. Well, we might get a nice little matchup on Good Friday.
Yes, indeed. We'll look forward to that, most definitely. Sorry, Dave.
I was going to say, it's a bit like Bradley Johnson's season at the moment, isn't it? In that Maddison, obviously his big goal scoring season of 14-15, when he banged in so many from long range. And Maddison has scored some absolutely fantastic goals this year. But if he's going to progress to the Premier League, yeah, you're going to need that. But he's probably not going to have another season where he manages quite so many worldies on a regular basis. So you think of maybe a Frank Lampard, who was just the master of getting into the box late and having that little bit of space to score much easier goals than the ones Maddison has scored this year. Maybe that's sort of the progression of his game, to take on Paddy's point.
And Pad, you clocked again just from watching on the outside how well Josh did, and it was sort of something we hadn't really. He has had some great games this year, and he has had pockets of looking in fantastic form, especially earlier on in the season as well, when he was kind of playing in a similar role. It was, of course, his 100th City appearance as well on Saturday, so an occasion for him. It's twice as many appearances as Jacob managed for Norwich. But it was interesting to me that Josh picked up on the fact that he wanted at the start of the season to be top scorer this year. He clearly wants to be in double figures, and he knows what his brother achieved last season. So he actually said he was disappointed with how this season has gone for him. And is it Josh, or is it purely positionally that has meant that we haven't seen more of that Josh from Saturday?
Well, I think it's an element of both, but again, I mean, it's noticeable that, you know, he is just a far more comfortable player in that position, wider left, where he's attacking a fullback on the outside, and that's the game. Now, okay, if you're critical of that, you could say, well, I'm sorry, but you're a young player, and as we've just talked about Maddison and developing nuanced elements to your game, then maybe that's a negative against Josh, that Farke clearly wanted him to add this almost Thierry Henry type conversion, in the sense of started as a wide player but then could go down the centre. And clearly the evidence would tell you that he hasn't managed to grasp that. And from, you know, you spoke to him after the game, we're getting the sense that he doesn't really want to be converted into a central attacking weapon. He still feels at this stage of his career he's a better, and you could just see, I mean, there's the freedom to his play because he knows that role inside out. That's the role all the way through the academy. Yes, okay, he might have occasionally played down the centre, but he made his reputation as a young man, and he got himself in and around under Chris Hughton at Premier League level, not as a centre forward, but as a guy who can attack the fullback on the outside, get his pace, get to the byline, pull balls back. And that 4 or 5 minutes worth of highlights that the club have put out from Reading, count the amount of times he's got to the byline and got outside his man. I mean, that's how the penalty came from that type of action. So, yes, OK, you could say Farke's tried to turn him into something he clearly isn't. And at this stage in his career, he is unwilling, or he's unable to do that. But there's no doubt the last two games that we've seen, Josh Murphy is far more effective in a wider left role.
Yep, that's his future. We spoke about it after the Barnsley game on the way home, didn't we? And that's where we've seen the best of Josh, and I thought he was really, really good. You know, all three goals came from initially Josh's good play on the left. That's where he should stay, and fair play to Farke perhaps for acknowledging that he's got that wrong to an extent. Readjusting, getting the best out of his squad, because he, as Josh said to you, Michael, after the game, it reminded him of playing with Jacob, but in having somebody on that right side that gives that proper bit of width and balance. And to be frank, it's more exciting to watch for fans, isn't it? I you know, if you were to hold a snap poll online now as to whether you should play three at the back against Fulham, I'd imagine it'd be pretty overwhelming, just because Fulham are playing brilliantly at the moment. I think it's 9 wins and 3 draws from 12. They are firmly on their way to sort of playoff success as things stand. They play some really good football. So, yes, that is maybe one way you need to sit back. But in terms of the development going forward, it's great to see that Daniel has acknowledged that width is A, needed to entertain the home fans, and B, needed to score more goals. Because if they'd have just scored literally 4 or 5 more goals at home this season at the right time, they would be in the playoffs.
It would indeed. I find it a fascinating psychological test of Josh, really, that, you know, clearly we all enjoy what we do well and we feel a comfort in that, but some people do then really excel when they're taken out of their comfort zone and given something new to get their teeth stuck into. And it's just interesting that Josh hasn't really done that.
Harrison Reed,
exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. Should we just touch on Jamal Lewis as a final point? Because Someone asked me, actually, I can't remember if it was in the Q&A or on Twitter, whether it might have been worth just giving Jamal another game off because he's going to be away with the international with Northern Ireland. Congratulations, Jamal. Brilliant for the kid who's clearly got a huge future ahead of him. But, you know, James Husband did okay at Barnsley and wouldn't have been any issue really putting him in again. And I don't think Jamal's playing badly. I don't think it's anything like that. But I think we're seeing where his inexperience is and how early he is in his professional journey that maybe dipping him out for another game might be a good thing. But I mean, he was at fault for the second goal. He kind of lost his man, and it was a difficult time for him at Hull, I guess, as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, in both instances, his body position's wrong. It's completely wrong, and that might be a lack of anticipation, a lack of experience or inexperience, and maybe where he was getting away with that in the first sort of stage of his career. Now he's finding out it's not all going to be plain sailing, and you know, the plaudits and the effusive praise are mixed in with some criticism from outside and inside. You know, his manager's called him naive on a couple of occasions, and that's probably just stating the obvious, given he is 19 years of age and really just a baby in footballing terms at this level. So what do you do? Do you take him out now? I think it's all part of his learning curve, and as we sadly have pointed out, that there's nothing materially on this league season now in terms of status and where Norwich will be next season. So I think as long as there's no fatigue factor involved, mental as well as physical, with that young man, particularly now he's not going to get a 2-week break because he's off with Northern Ireland, and I'm sure he'll play as well. Then I would continue, because he's the future, and sadly James Husband isn't in that position. So if it is all about next season and bedding things in and processes and performances and personnel and formations, then keep playing the lad.
Dave, three quick points. Let's rattle through them if we may. Dennis Shrabini, keep him in the side now, give him a proper run, because Nelson was back on the bench and he is going to be pretty much back to full fitness come Fulham.
Yeah, I think so. I think his touch was better, he looked fitter, he really worked for the team. There was one particularly nice point in the first half when he didn't quite squeeze a through ball through to Josh, but then realised Jamal was out of position because of that attack, dropped back into left back, made the tackle on Shani Aluko, and the crowd loved it. So I think that was basically the start of his career here.
Oh, big, I like that, Dave. Big shout. Marcus Edwards, he does exist. Not sure he's going to get very far with his level of warm-up, but, you know, at least we've seen him in the flesh.
Yeah, we have photographic proof now. Yes, it wasn't the game to throw him into, really. It was tense, it was nervy. Well, you know, whether Daniel really wants to sort of publicise that or not. But I also liked the use of Farkas substitutes. It was kind of a traditional English approach to let's break up play. You know, 89th minute, 92nd, 95th. We're just going to break things up for Reading here. And sometimes you have to do it. It's not pretty. But you obviously put Wes Houlihan on it instead of Marcus Edwards in that scenario. As we said before the game as well in the team news video, there weren't many options other than to put Marcus Edwards on the bench. So whether we'll see him between now and the end of the season is up to him. I'm sure we'll keep an eye on those England under 20 games to see if he can press his claim.
Indeed. It's all right if you don't need to make a substitute in the first 90 minutes, but sometimes you do need to do that as well. I'm not saying Daniel hasn't. And finally, the referee, Oliver Langford, I reckon he probably could have sent a couple of players off if he'd been so inclined, but I feel like I rant a lot about referees, and Paddy's clocked me up for it already this season. So he's shaking his head now. Look,
yes, you do enjoy a good ref moan, don't you? But yes, it was 15 seconds in. Sam Smith overeager charges across, takes out Tim Closer. It was a bad tackle, and I think if that had been 30 minutes or maybe even 15 minutes into the game rather than 15 seconds, that could well have been a red card, because it was a really stupid challenge, and it did seem to hurt Tim. So maybe not last season, whenever the laws changed, maybe even a couple of seasons ago, the keeper would have been sent off as well, wouldn't they? Now obviously you don't get the double punishment, do you?
So not worried about that, but you know, a tackle like that after 15 seconds bang in front of the linesman, you don't give a free kick. Come on, wake up, people. Right, Fulham's coming up. That's going to be hard, I think we know that. Fulham will go very close, I think, to going up, won't they, Pad?
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it? Yeah, and really, that's only carrying on from where they left off last season. Again, I'm pretty sure it was around Easter time where they came to Carr Road and basically gave Norwich a bit of a lesson that day. Carney was very good. Chris Martin, actually, it's coming back to me now. He actually got sent off, didn't he, just before half time?
Right, yeah,
so they had ten men for the second half, and they were still the better side. So that's why it was very surprising to see them languishing where they were at the wrong end of the table prior to Christmas. But steam train now, and yeah, they'll take some beating. Mitrovic seems to be scoring pretty much every week. So, and then it's QPR away Easter Monday, who seem to have picked up as well. So I think these are two very difficult fixtures now for Norwich. But you know, if you know Fulham might, yeah, like Dave's been saying, with the way they set about the task, that might just suit Norwich a bit better than maybe QPR. But it'll certainly be a bang tidy game that I think, and Norwich will need to be at it, because if not, they'll get taken to the cleaners.
Yeah, they did throw away a 2-goal lead on Saturday in their derby with QPR, and they, you know, you never know, some teams can have a wobble. Villa are having one at the moment. We had a bit of speculation out as well, haven't we, over the weekend, Dave? Mm-hmm. Huddersfield being linked with a colossal £15 million bid for James Maddison. I think we'll give that the attention which it deserves, which means we'll move on to the first appearance of Angus Gunn's future being discussed as well. Celtic, Stoke, who most people on my Twitter line seem to have been written off for staying in the Premier League, which I'd say is rather premature, kind of underlines probably with that interest and what's coming up in the summer, obviously, how unlikely it is that Angus will be here beyond the summer.
Oh, incredibly unlikely, I would say. For the consistency that he has shown this season, considering Norwich's struggles at time and just being a mid-table team, really, I can't really think of many times when he's really made errors. He's just been so consistent, and we, before he signed, we were told how good he was with his feet, and the only time you ever notice Angus Gunn's kicking is when he makes the very, very rare stray kick, and you think, oh, he is human almost, because it happens so irregularly. So I like Angus a lot, but if he wants any hope of breaking in at Manchester City in the future, he needs to be at a lower end Premier League team next year. If that's Stoke, that could be a good move. Jack Butland being linked with a big money move to Liverpool, isn't he? And it looks like he may just get the gloves for England at the World Cup this summer as well. If not, Celtic linked as well, and that's where Fraser Forster went after Norwich, wasn't it? And, you know, as he showed, you can play in the Champions League. Didn't he save a penalty against Barcelona in the Champions League at the Nou Camp? So although the Scottish Premiership is not really much better than the Championship, that Champions League experience can go a long way if you're a Manchester City goalkeeper. So I can't see Angus being back here at all. And to be perfectly honest, I'd have thought a promoted club like Wolves may even have a look at him. I mean, how many Norwich fans would say that Angus isn't an improvement on John Ruddy? I'd say that would be a fairly low number. So if I'm a Wolves fan, I would be quite happy to take Angus up with him.
I'm sure the guys at the football club, at Norwich City Football Club, are well aware of what they'll have to do if Angus isn't here, and are probably expecting it too, as much as they'd love Angus to stay. We talk a lot about James Maddison leaving and the hole that would leave and all this, that and the other pad, but for me it would be Angus is the one who's, it feels like he's just not taken for granted or underrated, but maybe just not appreciated just how secure he has made Norwich for someone who hadn't played a single first team game before he arrived here. And I do think they'll miss him next year.
Well, the reason he's under maybe not underappreciated but taken for granted is because he just does his job very well, and there's nothing flashy or showy about the guy. You know, he's a very mature keeper, not just in terms of how he carries himself off the pitch, but on the pitch. You know, he, for a man who hadn't played a professional game this season, it is quite remarkable that he looks like he's played 10 years at this level. And because of that, there is no doubt in my mind he will not be in goal for Norwich next season. So, you know, that's a loan that's worked for both parties, and to move that forward next season, not just it. The back, but midfield and up front. If Norwich can do two or three more of those type of deals, then I don't think they would weaken the squad.
No, and very true that Norwich have a pretty decent back catalogue now, of proving that coming on loan to Norwich as a young player with a bit about you is going to prove very worthwhile and is worth the parent club doing so. Of course, we'd all like them to be Norwich's own players, but that is the way it is. International break. Oh, go on, Dave.
I was just checking in the record books, actually, to see, because he's got 14 clean sheets now. I wondered where that ranked. And it's still possible he could equal the club record. He would need, which in this level, in the second tier, is 18, which was the 2004 title-winning team under Nigel Wellington, so Rob Green. Club record is 19, but that was the League One season, so that's probably not that much of a surprise. So, yeah, 4 clean sheets in his last 8, and he'd equal the club record at this level. So that would be a hell of a way to sign off, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. Okay, and finally, international break. There's some football happening that's not Norwich City. Anyone, any bit of it catching your eye? I couldn't even tell you who's playing what, to be honest. Pad?
Well, only with our Norwich hats on, it'd be nice to see Jamal, as you spoke about. You know, his mother, seeing him run out at Belfast, Windsor Park, and all that entails, that would be a lovely story from a Norwich dimension. And I'd also like to see Hanley get some time with Scotland, because if there's better Scottish centre-backs around, I haven't seen him at the minute. So, as Farker said, you know, he will have many more years ahead of him at that level. So it'd be nice, because it's Alec McLeish's first sort of 2 games in charge, if he goes with Grant and... And that'll just, you know, this leadership role that Farker is clearly bestowing on him, and which by his own performances on the pitch, he's taking that mantle on. I'm just thinking in terms of next season, moving it forward, who's going to be possibly leading out Norwich every week. I think it'd be another sign that, yeah, there's a very astute signing.
Love that.
Because you don't mess with Grant. I would be fairly sure. I think if anyone commands respect in that dressing room, it's going to be that man. If he tells you to do something, you're going to do it, aren't you?
That or fear.
Yeah. No, I like Grant. I'd be interested to see Kenny McLean, if he gets a bit of time with Scotland as well, because I still haven't seen a great deal of him, although I was just watching a video on the BBC site of him. They've got a bit of sort of a comedy footage of he had a shot in their game at the weekend, which was, I think they beat Dundee 1-0, and he had a shot from the edge of the box. We went just over the crossbar, and it was about to take out a guy who was walking down the steps with his coffee and a pie and wasn't looking, and someone heroically sticks out a foot and stops the ball hitting this guy's cup of coffee, and the guy almost didn't even seem particularly aware that it had happened. So that's you know, as much as I've seen of Kenny McLean this weekend, at least
hit the target, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, he's doing well on loan. Naismith scored and got an assist as well for the weekend for Hearts, so that boosts Norwich's chance of getting rid of him in the summer, doesn't it?
It's all right, he's playing for free, isn't he? I'm pretty sure he said that.
Yeah, who needs money nowadays?
Indeed. All right, well, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks all for listening. We much appreciate it. Pad, Dave, much appreciated you guys joining us. We will be back with a podcast, around Easter time, I guess. It'll be a little bit busy around Easter. Fulham away. No, Fulham at home on Boxing Day. Yeah, thanks, Pad. Fulham at home on Good Friday. QPR away on Easter Monday. And then after that, I'm sure we'll get some podcasting together for you to have a listen to. In the meantime, enjoy your international break. Get some Easter eggs, and we'll see you on the other side. Goodbye.